The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
Our first guest this morning has one of the highest IQs in the world. As a teenager, he made headlines when he hacked NASA from his family's farm in Kilkenny. Walter O'Brien now runs Scorpion Enterprises, a company which works with the US military, high net worth individuals and film production studios. His life even inspired a TV series. Walter, one of the highest IQs ever recorded. Is that a blessing or a curse?
It is both, depending on if you can, if you're smart enough to change yourself. So a lot of people with high IQ, they don't have empathy. It's hard to walk in other people's shoes. It's hard to relate to people or be able to read them or tell if they're lying to you or anything like that. So you end up with a lot of bullying and things in high school. If you think about it logically, your people skills come from your ability to put yourself in someone else's shoes, see things from their point of view, empathize, see where they're coming from. Well, the further away you are from them, the harder that is to do. So the more of an alien you are, the harder it is for you to relate to everyone. But
so how did that work out for you then, growing up?
Well, success in life in general is attributed 85% of your success is your EQ. 15% is your IQ. And I remember that was an Oxford study or something. So when I read it, I was like, I'm screwed.
so much for that IQ score.
Exactly. So, and when I say it's a blessing or a curse is if I stayed that way, it would have been a curse. I'd, you know, end up in someone's basement doing taxes somewhere. But if I could fix the EQ or appear to, or at least get it to average, then the IQ is a secret weapon. You know, then you have an advantage. The most successful people in the world, according to the book, The Outliers, were about 120 IQ, so they were smart enough, but then they were well-rounded in all the other cues.
Would you say if you could fix the emotional intelligence bit, it sounds as if that's something that you have worked on or that you have deliberately set about doing. When did you realize or become aware that, look, maybe I don't have the same emotional filter that other people might have?
I didn't know it was called EQ, but I learned early on. I started my business at 13. And by 16, I realized I was starting to lose business and lose customers. And my technology was technically correct, better, faster, and had less issues. But I'd still lose the customer because the other company was playing golf with the CEO every weekend. And that was more important than the stuff actually working. And that was the beginning of a path of, okay, there's this thing called EQ. I don't have it. I have to, at least like an actor, learn to simulate it well enough and then hire other people who have it intuitively. So there's an EQ test instead of an IQ test. And when we issued it, we found single moms, elementary school teachers, and psychologists scored above 75 on it. So we hired them and then started the journey or the secret sauce of my company is we developed an environment where the left brain folks and the right brain folks can work together without killing each other. And beyond that, they actually understand that they're useless without the other side. Since the geniuses don't speak human too well, the EQ people babysit the geniuses and the customers. So we call them super nannies.
So if you take the IQ, for you, you've got this incredibly high IQ. You're able to do a whole load of things with that. How then are what you might call the low EQ or emotional intelligence or those shortcomings, how did that manifest itself? What kinds of things? You said something about maybe not having empathy.
Yeah. So natural empathy that people would have doesn't come natural to me. It's an afterthought. So there's lots of times where I'll text something or write something that's all factual and then forget to add in some emotion to it that would be more appropriate. So a friend of mine said once, if their mother died, they'd cry on someone else's shoulder and then come to me to plan the funeral. Not the other way around. Right. So, you know, it can happen where you're honest to a fault as well, which is also what engineers are generally taught to do. So whether it's being honest with friends, if they're living in a delusional bubble, they don't want someone to be popping that bubble. And I learned recently, you know, the story of the emperor has no clothes.
Yes.
And that everyone was going along with the emperor has these magic invisible clothes. And then one kid points out, why is he naked? Well, in the fable, they all celebrate the kid because he woke everyone up to the reality. In reality, that original story had been adapted for modern day to have a happy ending. Originally, they just killed the kid. Nobody wants to hear the truth. So I spent my life being that guy in the Titanic going iceberg dead ahead and everyone else is playing the violins. And it's hard to make friends when you're like that.
If you say it's hard to make friends, having such an IQ, high IQ, surely must be good for getting dates. It's a great chat-up line, isn't it?
Nobody cares. No, I mean, look, they want the cool guy, the rock star guy, the guy with the motorcycle jacket, the person they shouldn't date, the bad guy, the one their mom would hate. That's who they want. When I look at stuff like this, I always look at the data, which no one does. Everyone else looks at Disney movies. Over in California, you have a 50% divorce rate and 25% of people wishing they're divorced but trapped because of the kids or finances. Well, that's 75% likely to lower your average happiness. Why would we do anything that would lower our average happiness? If that was a game in Vegas, you wouldn't play it. But we all do it because no one wants to look at the facts.
I want to go back to growing up. You originally are from Enniscorthy in Wexford, and the family moved to Kilkenny, to Callan, when you were quite young. Were you particularly good at school? Did you like school?
Actually, what happened to me at school we now use as a recruiting method to identify other prodigies. Because at school, everything with me was either kind of an A or a fail. I either cared or I didn't care. So if you took things like applied math and physics and architecture, what we knew as technical draftsmanship over here, I excelled at it. I was all mathematical and clear and practical, and it was problem solving, and I liked it. But then I think I failed Gaelic in the Leaving Cert because, again, I'm like, I'm probably not going to use it. So my brain would either turn off or turn on, depending on whether I like the teacher or the subject. And we recruit kids now by looking at their results and look for A's and F's. If it's all A's, they had a tiger mom. If it's all F's, we probably shouldn't hire them. But if it's just A's and F's and nothing in between, they're turning on and off extreme intelligence.
And one of the things you did that changed your life, really, is at an early age, you got your first computer. Was that a big moment for you?
Huge, yeah. No, I'd saved up for a year for it. It was £300, which was a lot at the time. I just lost myself in it. I mean, where I was, all there was drinking, hurling, or farming in the rain. None of those seemed appealing to me.
And what age were you?
9. So getting into robotics and artificial intelligence and graphics and virtual reality made me the crazy kid in the neighborhood because back then, nobody talks about that stuff. But I just found it just unlocked an entire universe of stuff where anything was possible. I could build anything in this universe for free if I thought about it hard enough.
And then, of course, you came to prominence when you hacked NASA, age 13?
Correct, yeah.
What possessed you for a start?
Well, that's the thing. It wasn't it wasn't planned that way. Back then, computers had no cool graphics or images or video or anything. So I got on the ARPANET via dial-up modem onto CompuServe in England. So it was a long-distance phone call, which wasn't fun for my dad. And then I was poking around, and back then there was no browser, so it wasn't like today where you see websites. You're basically looking at what was called bulletin boards and text-based stuff. And I stumbled across a DWG file, which is an AutoCAD drawing file, but it was 2 megs. So I'm like, must be a hell of a drawing. So I start downloading it, and I get cut off 10 minutes in, and I thought it was just Irish phone lines. And I get back into it, and exactly 10 minutes in, I get cut off again. I'm like, that's not an analog problem then. So if you ever tried telling a 13-year-old they can't have something, they get pretty persistent. So 4 days later, after designing something that would remember where I got cut off and start over again and take bits of it and reassemble it like a jigsaw puzzle, I managed to open the file. And I was very disappointed because all it was a circle. And I was so disappointed I threw the mouse down. And the wheely bit on the mouse zoomed and showed 2 circles. So I pick up the mouse and I start zooming out, and the whole wireframe picture of the space shuttle appeared. I was looking at the center of the wheel and the landing gear.
It was all there.
And it was all there. And I just printed out one of those old plotters and stuck it in my bedroom wall, and I thought it was cool.
Did you get in trouble?
Until I read the corner of it that said classified and not for public consumption. I was like, uh-oh.
But could they trace that you had done it?
Well, that's the thing. It was really easy to trace because all they had to do was they could tell it was through CompuServe, and then all they do is reverse look up the phone number because it was on a dial-up modem. So it wasn't hard to find me at all.
It's somebody in Kilkenny in Ireland has done this.
Yeah, and because I didn't know I was doing something illegal, it wasn't like I was trying to hide myself through other servers or things like that. But so they were just glad it wasn't the Russians at that point.
Did you keep the drawing, by the way?
I was told to delete it.
Sounds like you didn't. And you've discovered computers, you've discovered hacking, you've discovered all that. So instead of getting a job delivering newspapers or something, you get a job working for Irish banks.
Yeah. What happened was just the first I guess the English companies started using computers first, and they had Irish subsidiaries for banks and insurance companies and so on. And they were local, and there was no one local to do tech support back then. So they'd call me with the typical problem, bad floppy disks or the printer wouldn't work, or, you know, non-glamorous stuff like that. And I would just pop out during school or lunchtime or whatever. And every time I fixed the problem, someone would give me $100. And I was like, that's more than my pocket money. So I just did more of it. And as I got busier, then I had to hire other people to help me. So I hired the only kids who didn't bully me, which were the other gifted children and people from the computer society.
Were you bullied?
Tremendously. Yeah, absolutely. Kids in school. I was the poor kid, the fat kid, and the weird kid. So I was triple bullied.
How did that manifest itself?
Physically. If I bent down to tie my shoelaces, they'd slam my head into my knee so hard my braces would come through my lip. And then just, if I didn't get my back to the wall, like, someone would jump up behind me and put an elbow through my spine. So years of that.
That's a very, apart from a physically menacing and threatening place to be, it's a very lonely place to be.
My whole life has been a lonely place to be. There's only five of us.
What do you mean there's only five of you?
Well, fifth highest IQ in the world. There's only five you can truly empathize or see things from your point of view.
If you think about that afterwards, did it sort of make you more determined? Was that actually a driving force in your life, that bullying and the impact of that? Or was it something that was a negative in your life that has stayed with you as a negative?
Yeah, it absolutely drove me to get out. I worked to get out, not to get on. And I had no safety net. So if this didn't work, I'd be going back to that and farming. So I didn't have a choice. I had to make it work.
Now, the companies that you have set up, obviously Scorpion is the main business that you're involved in, and that does a lot of cybersecurity. You've also won contracts for the US military, more recently helping artificial intelligence with their drones. I suppose the first thing is, it's not necessarily doing drone strikes for the military. It's more about helping with surveillance in certain situations, is it? Is that what your product does for them?
So the Scorpion now, overall, just to kind of make it simple, 30% of our business is military. 30 is the Fortune 1000, so everything from smart grids to big hospitals, etc. And then and the last third is a one called Concierge Up, which is for high net worth individuals. And we spend about 10% of our time with Scorpion Studios. So that's where we do the TV show, Spider-Man Venom, Spider-Man Homecoming, and a few more shows coming up where we're the tech advisors. So that's kind of the breakdown of the company at a high level. On the military side, we've done nuclear subs, ballistic missile defense, command and control systems for the Navy. And the
When you say you've done it, what have you done?
You
feed into their computer systems. Is it all about an artificial intelligence or...
So we have 155 different products that we license out. The top ones, what they do primarily is mitigate human error from mission critical systems. So a working professional human makes mistakes about 3% of the time. And in most of life, you don't even notice that. But if you're doing air traffic control, nuclear security, stuff like that, 3% is not acceptable. So we need AI to go beyond that to eliminate human error. We have the fastest AI engine in the world called SenGen. It took me 7 years to write it, about 20 hours a day to code it. It's kind of like a double-headed chess computer, but you abstract from it the pieces of chess and the rules of chess into a modeling language. So I can model anything now as a game, and it'll generate every possible
scenario.
So for military, that's used by SOCOM to do mission planning for the Navy SEALs. What's everything that could happen? What could go wrong? What could go right? War games in Afghanistan. We use it as well for drone formations, like what they call swarm math, how they fly as a swarm.
How comfortable are you with doing that kind of work for the US military? Are you satisfied that they're always the good guys and that they don't make mistakes?
No, I'm not satisfied with that. What I do know is the systems that I develop are about 96 to 97% accurate. The ones that they develop are 80% accurate. So a lot of people will die if I let them use the inaccurate systems. They're going to use them anyway.
Quite a lot will die even with the accurate ones, though.
Correct.
Too, won't they?
But they, whether I work on it or not, they're still going to do it. So at least if I make it more accurate, less innocent people die. So it's more about that than any particular moral judgment.
What do you think of the hacking that has taken place in the political realm as well as in the commercial realm, and how espionage and spying and that sort of thing has sort of morphed into interfering in elections such as happened in the United States with Donald Trump's presidential election?
I think it's all perception. No one's pointed out any hacking yet anywhere. We keep referring to it as hacking, but other than running some Facebook ads and some propaganda, where's the actual hacking? Nobody changed the election results. Nobody hacked into the machines. Nobody changed how the votes were tallied. All they did was propaganda. And all countries do that against other countries all the time. So
you don't think there's anything new in that?
No, I think it's all, that part's blown out of proportion. If they wanted democracy, there's systems out there that will guarantee a fair vote. They just don't want to use them.
But what about the use of social media, for example, a very effective use of social media by what looks like a foreign government, namely the Russians, yeah, which influenced the election?
Yeah, no, that absolutely happened, but that's not hacking. That's just good intelligence work.
But there's a lot of hacking going on that's in the political realm, hacking into what appear to be health system, IT systems regarding the health sector, electricity utilities. It's sort of shaping up to be the new sphere of global conflict.
No, absolutely it is. No, and the next war will be a cyber war, and whichever country's best at math will win it, which is probably not the US.
Who is, do you think?
The Israelis are number one right now in software. Chinese are close number two, and Russians, Ukrainians, probably number two or number three. You know, their parents are all rocket scientists, and they grew up with this and nothing better to do, like me, than to get good at it. The rest of the world doesn't take it seriously. We talk about it, we publish papers about it, but no one actually does it. Every time a bank is hacked or an airline is hacked or a healthcare place is hacked, check if this chief security officer was fired. They're not. There's no governance without consequence. And if there's no consequence, why would anyone bother fixing it? They can write it off to insurance.
Have you made a lot of money over the years?
We've done all right, yeah.
You're smiling when you say that. So that sounds like very all right. Well, yeah, do you enjoy quite a good lifestyle, or do you enjoy a lavish lifestyle? What do you spend your money on?
Well, I am a geek gone wild. So it's less about lavish lifestyle in terms of people who go after certain brand names and stuff. I'm not interested in showing off to anyone else. I get things that are interesting to me. So whether it's a Han Dynasty horse, a Fabergé egg that used to belong to a king, James Bond's golden gun from the...
Got that?
I've got the golden gun, Darth Vader's helmet, the cane from the Avengers that Emma Peel had, the gold bar from Goldfinger, things we grew up with. And then, of course, as an engineer, I love cars. So all the cars that used to be in my poster or I played with Dinkies as kids are now in my garage, what I call my one-to-one scale collection.
One-to-one. What's your favorite car in that collection?
I don't have a favorite. It's really each
one. Which would be the last one you'd sell if you had to sell them all?
The Lamborghini Countach.
In relation to Ireland and your experiences growing up, and your parents are still here in Ireland, how often do you come back?
Well, I used to bring them over more often because I could do for them over there. Plus Wi-Fi and internet and everything else is important for me to keep the business running. When I come over,
do you like coming back to Ireland?
Not particularly, only because of the infrastructure here is not supportive of doing any form of business at all. Just basic either cell coverage, high-speed internet, having proper redundancy in the infrastructure, it's all missing. So it cripples my business when I come here.
Has it not improved a lot? I mean, we've a lot of successful businesses. It's not that bad, is it?
Maybe in Dublin, but try doing it in Callan. So my parents live in a black hole that has no cell phone signal and no way to get internet in any way to the house. I see very little evolution in the last 20 years on any attitude towards embracing technology, either in the educational side or in the practical side. If you take a country like South Korea, 20 years ago, the government laid down fiber to every school for free because they knew it was important. And now they're one of the strongest economies in the world. That's not a coincidence.
The Scorpion TV series, based on... it says inspired by the life of Walter O'Brien and the character is Walter O'Brien. It was based on you. What did you think of the series? Did you like it?
Yeah, well, I was the executive producer of the series, so I was heavily involved in it. I think they did a good job. I think it was a good exercise in me exercising my EQ and letting go. Because if I stayed there and made it all technically correct, it would be a documentary on Discovery Channel that wouldn't be watched much. So it was the right thing to do, to let go.
Did you enjoy sitting down watching it? Was that good for... how you'd feel about yourself, good for your ego. There's this massive success TV show based on my life. Or was it, what was it like to watch episodes of?
I actually didn't even consider the ego angle of it. I mean, I grew up watching The A-Team, MacGyver, Knight Rider, like all of us, a bunch of oddballs saving the world. So it was nice to complete that cycle and become the next cyber MacGyver and create a show. Ultimately, I love the letters from the kids. We got hundreds and thousands of letters from kids and fan mail and everything talking about how it changed their life. 12-year-old girls saying, I want to be a cyber engineer now. I didn't know that I was allowed to be. The notes we got from 16-year-olds who had detailed plans on how to kill themselves, who decided not to because when they saw the show, they realized there's other people like them out there and they just hadn't met their own kind yet. That's what mattered to me way more than me being on the big screen.
Well, Walter O'Brien, it's been fascinating. Thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Thanks for having me.